If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to Woman Patriot. I was having I was getting really nervous because I had to reload Skype. I was having a problem with that, but I'm so glad to be here, and I'm glad everything's in, and I'm really excited about tonight's show because we have Evan Chayet coming on, and he's going to talk to us about his show, his book, The Kindergarten Garden of Eden, and I'm really excited to have him on the show. So welcome, everybody. We do have call-in, so if anybody wants to call in, the call-in number is 718-305-7176. And today is actually July 2nd, 2013. But on this day in 1776, Congress officially votes for the independence from Great Britain. So we actually have a happy Independence Day today, because it's just as important as it was before. And welcome, Uncle Bing. Thank you so much for the last minute saving of me. It's going to be great. And no, how are you, by the way?
I'm all right. Just a little sore, but I'm okay.
Yeah, you wrecked that truck. Boy, that didn't look very good.
No, that was pretty... I didn't have to pay no money for that amusement ride, okay?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're physically okay. That's all a good thing. Anyway.
Yeah, somebody was looking out for me that day, so.
And I tell you, I believe in angels. I really do. And for those who don't, I'm sorry for them, because they don't know what they're missing. I have a little bit of a rant here that I've got going on. You know, like I said, today is the day that Congress officially votes for the independence from Great Britain. But on the 4th of July in 1776, the day that it was absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and all the political connection between them and the state. And this is all right out of the Declaration of Independence. And what I get is, you know, thank God that our founding fathers had the wisdom that they did to know that somebody would try to be king again. Hence, who we have for president today. And there's so much going on. And actually, I don't know if you're all up on what's going on over in Egypt, but I hope Obama is looking at that and is starting to fear that might happen here, because that is going to be our last resort if if things don't shape up. I know I'm preaching to the choir when I say this. I'm sick and tired of our government not doing what we want them to do. There's a lot less of them now. There's a lot less of them that want this crap, because more and more people are seeing just what this man is doing to our country. He's really screwing it up bad. And people that I've talked to actually have surprised the daylights out of me, because they're like, they were Obama supporters in the beginning, and now they're not. And it's like, see, I'm really not wearing a tinfoil hat. There really is truth to what is going on, and they're seeing it. And it makes me so proud. I hold my head up high when that happens, because I get so mad when people think I'm crazy. Well, I am a little crazy, but that part keeps me from going insane. And anyway, all in all, it's just another one of those weeks. You know, Obama's out spending another $1 billion of our money, and he's playing. Did anybody hear him yesterday? Oh, my God. He's telling Africa, like, you can't be as good as us. You need energy here, and we don't need it in the States. I don't know. He's just really, really stupid. Anyway, and then Michelle, you know, it's like prison being in the White House. Well, there should be a jail cell down in the basement of the White House. And she should be in it with her husband, because that's where they belong. Tried and convicted. I'll be the judge and jury. They're gone, because that's exactly what those justices are doing. They're all being their job is to be judged. But instead of abiding by what the Constitution says, they make up their own idea of what the Constitution says and is and does. So, what you got? Go ahead.
I was going to say, Barbara, whatever happened to American exceptionalism? Whatever happened to the pride in this country? We are the greatest country because of our exceptionalism. We rose in just a short few number of years, actually. We went from nothing, from being obscure, to being the most feared country, the biggest economic power, the biggest military. And it was because of exceptionalism. It was because of American exceptionalism. And here, Mr. King and I, you know, or her, they want to sit there and badmouth this country for, you know, to put us in the third world on par with a third world country. No, I'm sorry. I ain't buying that. We got here because of our exceptionalism in not just, you know, not just in how we think in economic areas. You know, we've got some of the brightest thinkers, the greatest people on earth here, and people that actually go out and protect our rights. We don't have a king, and we don't want a king. We escaped from that tyranny.
Yes, we did, and that's what I was saying. We might have to do it again. And that's why I really hope that Obama's looking at what's going on over in Egypt, because it's coming. If he doesn't stop this crap, it's coming. And you're right. We were the most powerful until this clown goes around saying, you know, how... you know, bad-mouthing us. Oh, I'm sorry. And they all see it. They're all laughing at us. They know we're weak. And Obama letting them know we're weak. And that's going to hurt us in the long run. By letting the borders stay open and... please, that's a whole nother rant for me. But the borders are open to everyone. They're letting anybody and everyone come in this country. And supposedly, you know, and it goes back to those bombers in Boston. You know, this is what they're saying they're going to do. Okay, well, you've been doing it, supposedly. Then how did you not know? You knew this, the one guy left, but you didn't know he came back. He got lost in the shuffle. Really? I don't believe it for a minute. I believe they're setting us up, and I don't trust them. The only thing I trusted that he said in Africa when he said, don't trust anybody, not even the U.S. And that's sad, because we've got bigger shoulders than that. And Uncle Sam...
Well, like I said, American exceptionalism, that's what made this country, and that's what's going to keep making this country. And when they start taking that away or knocking that down like it's some sort of non-existent birthright, or, you know, it's not allowed to us, then that's where we're going to have problems, or that's where I'm going to have problems with this administration. I already have problems with this administration, but... That's where we're going to end up losing it.
Yeah, and that's the way it's working. And we have the Senator Cruz's. He's really the only one standing up for us right now. I mean, we have Rand Paul, Marco Rubio, forget it. He is just history. There's quite a few in the House. Trey Gowdy, I just love him, and we need so many more of him, but there are others that are standing up for our rights. We need the people in the Senate. That's why this 2014 election is so important. We've got to get everybody out. Yes, Gowdy rocks. We've got to get him out of We've got to take over the Senate, is what I was going to say. Anyway, we've got on conservativenationradio.org, we are proud to welcome Inside Tennessee with Dave Vance to our lineup on Mondays. But even if you're not familiar with the volunteer state, the issues that affect Tennesseans are spreading out all over America. Dave Vance brings his veteran insight and some of the most informed guests to Inside Tennessee every Monday. So make sure to check him out. Brought to you by the Tennessee Action Council, Inside Tennessee, Mondays at 7 Eastern, 6 Central on conservativenationradio.org. Real conservatism for real conservatives. That's us.
That's good.
Okay. And let me just go ahead and take this short break, because we do have Evan Sayet coming on. He's going to give us a call in about 15 minutes. So let me get this breaks out of the way for the moment.
This is a guided meditation on parenting. Take this time to breathe deeply and close your eyes. Right now, you're completely in control. Unlike the time you and your son played basketball and you attempted to slam dunk. Or when you tried removing those raccoons from the basement. Concentrate on the soothing sound of my voice. Release the memory of when you wrestled with that beehive in your son's treehouse. Let go of the time you thought that skunk was a cat. Or when you pulled into the garage with your son's bike on top of the car. Deep breaths. Deep breaths.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
So... I'm a dog, and I just got adopted by this new human guy, and I'm starting to wonder how he got along without me. I mean, okay, something as simple as walking around the block. He's got this leash thing, and he puts me on one end and him on the other, and I'm just taking him around. I think he's afraid of getting lost. Without that leash and me guiding him along, I don't think he'd find his way back home. But it's kind of cute.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Okay, and we are back. I'm real excited about having Evan come on. Have Uncle Bing, have you listened to his Heritage Foundation speech?
Yeah, I listened to some of them, and just terrific material, man. Terrific material. And you are listening.
You're listening
to
Women
Patriot. Yeah, it's 718-305-7176 is the call-in number. 718-305-7176. And yeah, I mean, I guess we got a bunch of questions for him. So, you know, as soon as he gets on here, we'll take off with that. Anything else happening in the world today that just freaked you out, Barb?
Oh, let's see. Not off the top of my head that I know of.
I mean, we got the Egypt thing and everything going on there.
Okay.
And actually, we're gonna have a guest on next week on Sunday that is going to shed some more light on this because he's from Egypt. And that's Usama Dakduk, so we're from the Grace Ministry. So we're going to have him on. That's going to be a good show, I think, too.
Well, that'll be excellent. You know, there's so many. I mean, we're all foreigners, basically. You know, all of our ancestors came from other countries and migrated into the United States. You know, and there is a way to do it legal. There continues till this day to do it legal. The sad thing is, this government just wants to give it to them. Now, I know my grandparents, when they came over here, they wanted to fit in with this country, so they spoke English. And my left-handed grandfather had to learn how to write with his right hand because they couldn't teach left hand back then. So he was able to, learn that because, again, they wanted to fit in. They didn't want to be different. They wanted what America had to offer. And, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Well, my grandparents found much happiness until they had me. Ah, ha, ha. Just kidding.
Well, they wanted to assimilate. They wanted to be part of the culture, you know.
Exactly.
We've got people in this country right now that don't want to, and we're giving them asylum. We're letting them come in here, and they don't want nothing to do with this culture. They don't care. They're here for a job, and they're here for the free bennies and to send their money back home if they do, and you know whatever. They're here for whatever reason. They don't want to assimilate. They don't want to take on the responsibility, you know. And they don't want to be exceptional, you know.
Yeah.
As I alluded earlier, there's a difference here. When you're exceptional, you think of yourself. When you get up in the morning, you put a suit on and you go out to work, or you know whatever, your pantsuit if you're a woman. But if you get up and you just put on some dirty old dungarees or whatever, you know, jeans and stuff, and you go outside, that's how you're going to feel pretty much all day. And you have to get into this frame of mind that you're not, we are not like any other country on this earth. We're not.
Right.
And I'm not apologizing for it.
Absolutely.
But we have a president that does this daily. That's done this from day one. I mean, it's sad.
It is very sad. You know, what I was going to say, too, is that, you know, my grandparents wanted to be here. They followed the law. They abided by the rules of law when they were here. And they earned it, you know, and that's the pursuit of happiness. They earned it. Nothing was handed to them. And I know for me, when I earn something, I appreciate it so much more than somebody just handing me something. Not that I'm not grateful for somebody giving me something, but when I earn it myself, that's my pursuit of happiness. You know, I earn my own paycheck. I've been earning my own paycheck forever, you know. And when I was a kid, money wasn't just handed to me. I had to go out in the yard. I lived next to a drugstore, and then across the street was a whole bunch of more stores. So everybody, you know, a lot of people would throw things out the window or just throw it down as they're walking down. And I used to get money. I would get paid to go outside and pick up all the papers out of the yard. I had to earn it. You know,
yeah,
and,
well,
and
life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness does not guarantee that you're going to get either, you know, or all, any of them, you know. I mean, it just means that you're granted that. You know,
you
have the ability.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly my point.
It depends on how hard you want to work for it, you know, and how much you want it. And like I said, there's a lot of people with this amnesty bill and so on that Rubio, you know, I mean, I've been talking about Rubio for quite a long time, and he is the epitome of just a mediocre politician, in my opinion. You know, he's the same thing like everybody else. You just go along with the flow, and he's in with the big boys now, and he wants to be a big boy. And the thing is, he can't be. So, you know, he's going to come up with his amnesty bill, and then we got Bob Corker, we got my other senator here from Tennessee walking around saying, you know, they're supporting this, and I'm like, you know, I don't know, it's embarrassing to me, you know, because Rubio, you know, being from Florida, and here I lived in Florida, I wasn't down there when he was over there, but, you know, I mean, you know, here it's embarrassing to me, in my state of Tennessee.
You know, here we have 52% of the people calling into Kay Hagan's office saying no. This is what her constituents, 52% of her constituents told her to vote no. And what does she do? She votes yes. So what does that tell you? It tells you they're out for what they want, not what the people of their state want. So there's somebody up, we're going to be, well, actually, there's a couple of people going to be running against her. And I can tell you, she better lose, because if she doesn't lose, then we know there's going to be more fraud. Speaking of fraud, just came out a little bit ago before the show started that the taxes, I guess, $2,000 taxes on Obamacare is going to be held off for another year, because they're working on Obamacare. Come on, really? It's the law, and now you're going to start working on it? They need to shred it and do nothing with it, because it just needs to be gone. It's not government job to take care of my health care. If I had my own money.
Yeah.
If I stopped giving them my damn money, I'd have enough money to pay for my own health care.
Yeah. But they had to pass it before they read it and before they, you know, enacted on it and so on, before they even understood what it was about. I mean, you know, that's the way this country's been. You know, it's gotten to be anyways, is that we just sit there and pass laws before we read them, before we understand them, before we know the full implications of them. And, you know, every day we keep reading stuff about Obamacare that's coming out where, you know, it's going to cost employers a lot more. There's already doctors getting out of the healthcare system. There's probably lawyers getting into it, because that's where the money's going to be, you know, if they think they can sue the government. But you got all these people that are getting out of it and so on. They're just detuning from society because society has become so corrupt and just so vast and so expansive that they don't want to be ruled. And I don't blame them. I really don't blame them.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad that there's so many more people that are stepping up to the plate, because they're all tired. And one of the other things, too, is there's so many people that oh, I know this sucks, and they don't do anything about it. You know, I was really surprised about a week or two ago, Glenn Beck had on his show about the Syrian rebel that killed the Syrian soldier and ate his heart and his liver. And my brother, he's one of those people that don't really pay attention to the news. And he reposted that on Facebook today. And I'm like, this is really what's happening in this world. It's not just talk. And he was like, he liked my, you know, liked what I said. But it's so true, you know, and it's just getting, like, totally unbelievably unreal. But anyway, LifeLock, conservativenationradio.org, is proud to be associated with the most effective identity, security, and credit monitoring service there is. It's LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. There's really nothing that comes close to LifeLock. To protect your identity with LifeLock, go to conservativenationradio.org and click on the LifeLock banner. Network may not cover all transactions and the scope may vary. That's conservativenationradio.org and click on the LifeLock banner. And if anybody wants to call in, the number is 718-305-7176. Come on in and join the show. And we are going to be getting a phone call in a little bit. So in the meantime, while we're waiting, I am going to go ahead and take these little breaks.
Whether you're on active duty, a veteran, or just admire American Armed Forces, there's no better place to get the widest variety of militaria than at Highlands Militaria. Highlands Militaria is one of America's premier distributors of Fox tactical gear and outdoor products. Veteran-owned and operated, Highlands Militaria offers new and used uniforms and insignia from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and today, with an emphasis on airborne and special operations insignia, gear, collectibles, and uniforms. If you need to replace a cherished badge or unit patch, or just want to gear up for your next outdoor adventure, go to Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria. where you'll find the best supply of the military gear you need. Shipping is always free with one-day handling time, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria. And thank you for your service.
Happy anniversary, honey.
Oh, you shouldn't have. Wait, is that a goat?
Goats are a great gift, but maybe not for her. Go to goatsfortheoldgoat.com to give a goat and end hunger in South Sudan. So, do you like it? Goatsfortheoldgoat.com.
Okay, and we're back. And we're waiting for his phone call, but other than that, we've got... there's just a lot that's going on in the news. President Obama is on his way back from his million-dollar trip. That just kills me. We have the sequester where our children can't go to the White House, but they've got $1 million. And we have a phone call. Hi, this is Women Patriot.
Hey, what's going on?
Oh, me. What's going on with you?
Not, it's Michael.
I know.
Well, it was a good conversation y'all were having. Are you fixing to have a guest? I can wait.
No, he hasn't called in yet, so we're actually just waiting on his call. So.
Well, I can't wait to hear him. It was an interesting conversation y'all were having. You were talking about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and Being was talking about, you know, how everybody's given the chance to make it here. You know, going into the 4th of July, and with what's been happening here in Texas, which is the main reason for my call, aside to listen to the guests this evening, you know, it occurs to me that life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, first of all, we're all guaranteed with equality of opportunity, not equality of outcomes. And that's where we've lost the exceptionalism that y'all were speaking about in America. We've lost the notion and the idea that we're a country based on the opportunity to be successful. We don't give you the equality of outcomes, and that's what progressives want. They don't only want to level the playing field that everybody has the same chance. They want everybody to have the same outcome, which is the stock and trade of socialism. But you know, with the troubles, Brenda or Barbara and Bing, that we've been having here in Texas this last week, that I'm sure everybody's heard about, and I'll address in just a minute, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. It occurs to me that you can't have liberty or happiness unless you have life. You've got to have life first. And we've got a senator here in Texas, Senate District 10, a Democrat who won in 08. She was ran as a moderate Democrat. And keep in mind, generally speaking, most Democrats in Texas tend to be a little more conservative than most of your northeastern Republicans. This lady has showed her true colors. I'm sure everybody saw the news last week where Wendy Davis in her pink sneakers filibustered, and then an unruly mob that consisted of NARAL, Planned Parenthood, the OWS crowd.
I heard she wore a catheter, too.
I beg your pardon?
I heard she wore a catheter.
Yes, she did, as a matter of fact. Upset the decorum in the business of the people. Now, keep in mind that in Texas, 62% of Texans consider abortion after 20 weeks to be basically infanticide. It's murder. A baby is viable at the very minimum, for sure, of 24 weeks, but there are babies that have been born at 19 and 20 weeks that have survived outside of the womb. This crowd would have us believe that a woman has a right to murder that child. So I would like to ask all of your listeners, find me on Twitter. It's at @CNRHost_Michael, or go to our main Twitter that our general manager, Teresa Brusky, does for us. And I pop in there from time to time and will tweet something from that account, but I generally stay out of it. But I did today. So you can go to @CNRShows, and you will find a tweet where I have put Wendy Davis, Texas. That's Wendy Davis's Twitter handle, and I've attached a video to it that a good friend of mine here in Texas, Alice Linehan, has put together. That we want, it's from Women on the Wall, womenonthewall.org. I highly recommend everybody go and check that site out. We want to make this go viral. We're asking patriots across America, help Texas stand for life. We're going to pass the bill. We're not worried about that, but help us be a part of this. Everybody across America can be a part of defeating Wendy Davis and Cecilia Richards, who's the daughter of the former governor Ann Richards. You can help defeat these folks by going and helping us make this video that I've tweeted and I'm going to put on the Conservative Nation Radio Facebook page, which is Facebook/Conservative Nation Radio, and repost to everybody in your networks and retweet. Let's make this video go viral. It shows Wendy Davis for the pro-murdering, progressive, liberal, radical that she is. You're going to hear a lot of people say that It's the 20 weeks is not the big deal. It's the fact that we want to close abortion clinics. There's provisions in the bill that require the abortion clinics to have the same surgical ambulatory regulations and standards that any medical clinic has. This is what happened in Philadelphia with Kermit Gosnell, and this is what brought this about. We're trying to close down the sub, and this is to protect women. This is to protect women that go that decide to get an abortion. Though I may disagree with them, if they're going to go in and do it, we at least want them to do it in a safely regulated place that's within 30 miles of a hospital or a doctor that can take care of them, so that they don't bleed to death on those botched abortions.
Yeah.
Now there's going to be those people that say, well, in the rural areas, you know, this is, you're making it impossible. They, you know, well, that's just too bad. That's really just too bad. We have to have safe medical practice in place. If it's going to be legal, and currently in Texas, it's legal up to 26 weeks. We're going to change that. We're going to take it down to 20 weeks because life is viable at 20 weeks. What you see at 20 weeks is a human life. It's not a clump of cells. Help us.
Right.
Retweet this womenonthewall.org. Retweet this video that contrasts Senator Donna Campbell, whom I helped get elected, and Senator Wendy Davis, who we're going to fire. By the way, we're going to have a primary, and it's going to include someone by the name of Connie Burton. Y'all will hear me talking about Connie a lot. Connie's a good friend of mine. She was my field director for Senator Ted Cruz. I took my direction from her working as a volunteer for Senator Ted Cruz. She is going to run, if we win the primary in next March and we beat Dr. Shelton and the other individual that will be primarying on the Republican side, and I think we will win, then we're going to go head-to-head with Wendy Davis if Wendy Davis chooses to run again for SD10. This is probably a career-ending move that she has made, because she's been tweeting about how they just want people to do the work of the people. Well, the work of the people, 62% of puts majority in. But y'all got your guest on. Thank you for giving me just a moment. Go to the Facebook page or go to the Twitter handles and retweet, and let's make this thing go viral. I'll talk to you guys later. Just park me so I can listen.
All right.
Thank you,
Michael. Kevin, thank you so much for your patience and hanging out there. How are you?
No, that's not a problem. I just said to myself, oh, my gosh, maybe it's another guest.
that's
insulting. Nobody ever gives me less than, you know, my due, huh? Maybe I should hang out.
No, I'm glad you did. I'm so glad you're here. Yeah, we've been really excited about having you on.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Yes, Karen Sigmund, she is from Rage Against the Media. That's rageagainstthemedia.org. Just love Karen. She's been our guest several times, and she's the one who introduced us. So why don't you give everybody a little background about you and how you came about your book?
Oh, my. That's such a long story. Here we go. I'm going to do my best. I'm a New York City. Say again?
You've got all the time in the world.
Okay. It's a 52-year story, but I'll go as quickly as I can. I was born a New York City liberal Jew. My liberalism was... Yes?
Sorry.
My liberalism was not... in intellectual choice. I don't think liberalism ever is an intelligent intellectual choice. It is what Andrew Breitbart would call the default factory setting for somebody born into that time, that place, the demographic. You know, I knew growing up what all liberals know, what all Democrats know. Democrats are good and Republicans are evil. That's really all you needed to know. Democrats like peace, Republicans like war because it's good for business. Democrats like the air, Republicans don't breathe air or something, I don't know, but I know they love to pollute the air. And basically, liberals are the good guys, and I was a good guy, so I was a liberal. Along came 9/11, and the truth is I call myself a 9/13 Republican. See, 9/11 didn't really surprise me. Obviously, I didn't know the target. Obviously, I didn't know the date. Obviously, the carnage sickened me. But even as a brain-dead liberal, I knew just enough about the realities of the world to know that the same people who were murdering the Jews of Israel because they were the closest infidels, who were murdering the Christians in Egypt because they were the closest infidels, who were murdering the Hindus in India because they were the closest infidels, would, when they could find a way to get here, come and massacre the big infidel. What really surprised me was not the attacks. It was really what I call 9/12, metaphorically, the days, the weeks, the months, and the years after 9/11, and the liberal response to the attack. The idea that we deserved it, that we had provoked it, that it was, quote, the chickens coming home to roost, according to Jeremiah Wright, Barack Obama's spiritual mentor. There were college professors, there were college professors who were teaching and saying publicly that we, all of us, all Americans deserve to be attacked in that way because every American is a little Eichmann. And rather than this professor being shunned, rather than this professor being attacked by fellow liberals for such a horrible and factless argument, he actually got invited to speak at more college campuses after he said that. And so suddenly here was the biggest case of good versus evil of my lifetime. In fact, born into the era in which I was born, it was the first real case of good versus evil that I had witnessed at all. And here we had the liberals intentionally making stupid, false arguments. We provoked it. Okay, so let's say we are these horrible people. Why are they murdering all these other people everywhere around the world? They didn't do what evil America did. So they were intentionally making themselves stupid in order to side with evil. And I had to figure out, how is it that they think? And, you know, I have an expression, the first time you think is the last time you're a Democrat. So once I recognized this one issue, I was able to open my eyes to everything else, and I recognized this pattern. And the pattern is that they will intentionally ignore the facts, intentionally put forth infantile arguments, always on behalf of the evil, failed, and wrong. And so as I recognized this pattern more and more, and I studied it more and more, and I read more and more with my newly opened eyes, I came to this unified field theory of liberalism, and I presented it in a speech to the Heritage Foundation in 2007. It was a speech that Andrew Breitbart called one of the five most important conservative speeches ever given. And it is now by far the single most viewed lecture in their history. And that is the basis of the book, The Kindergarten of Eden, How the Modern Liberal Thinks.
Well, wow. You said something about getting into the head of a liberal. I'm thinking, man, you got a lot more guts than I do.
Well, you know, okay, you have to understand them because something that strikes us, let me be clear about something. First of all, I don't mean lowercase l classic liberals. I don't mean lowercase l. Lowercase l liberalism now resides in the Republican Party because what we seek to champion and what we seek to preserve, what we seek to conserve, which is why we're conservatives, is a liberal democracy. It doesn't exist on the left any longer because they don't respect a liberal democracy as any better or any worse than any other culture.
No, and right. I was talking earlier about exceptionalism, how America is an exceptionalist country, and we should be proud of that. We should not be tearing that down.
Well, that's just proud. We need to protect it, and we need to spread it. I don't mean we need to spread America. We need to spread the things that make us exceptional. You know, the freedom of speech, freedom of religion, the Judeo-Christian mindset. Absolutely. But here's the problem, and I don't want to jump ahead of myself, but I may or may not be right now. But here's the problem. If America isn't exceptional, right, and Barack Obama was asked point blank, do you believe in American exceptionalism? And he gave a very clever, very politic answer in which he said yes, and then went on to make it very clear he meant no. What he said was, do you believe in American exceptionalism? He said, I do, just as I'm sure the Brits believe in British exceptionalism and the Greeks believe in Greek exceptionalism. In other words, if he does believe America is exceptional at all, it's just his personal taste. It's because he's rooting for the home team. It's not because he's studied the Constitution and respects it, or that he reveres the Judeo-Christian heritage or the Protestant work ethic. Right? So if America is not special, then how is somebody like Obama and all of the people who think the way he does, how are they to explain America's prosperity? How did we get so rich? If we're nothing special, our richness is unfair. Why should we be rich if we're nothing special? And given that we are the richest nation in the world, they have no choice but to see us as the most unjust nation in the world. So what they think is putting us just in the middle of the pack along with everyone else doesn't do that. It flip-flops things. If you didn't build that business, well, then it's not fair if your business is successful. And how did you get successful? This is why they will invariably side against the good, right, and successful. That's what the book says. The Kindergarten of Eden says the modern liberal will invariably and inevitably side with evil over good, wrong over right, and the behaviors that lead to failure over those that lead to success. You know, in the book, I lay out the four laws. They're actually a unified field theory of liberalism. And I lay out the four laws. Can I give you the first two laws now?
You sure can.
Okay, I'm going to give you the first one the way it's written in the book, and then I'll explain. In the book, it says, the modern liberal was raised to believe that indiscriminateness is a moral imperative because its opposite is discrimination. You see, in the 1980s, thinking was outlawed. In the 1980s, which is by no coincidence, when the first children of the 60s were reaching their positions of power and influence in academia, so they were now educating our children, journalism, so they were now telling us what the truth was, Democratic Party politics, so that they could legislate, and entertainment, just when they were reaching their positions of power, they deemed thinking to be a hate crime. Right, and here's the argument behind that. Anything the individual believes is going to be so tainted by his personal prejudices. Like prejudices we all have. Prejudices we can't help but have is simply part of the human experience. Prejudices based on things like the color of your skin, the nation of your ancestry, your height, your weight, your sex, and so on. Anything that the individual believes is going to be so tainted by his bigotries that the only way not to be a bigot is to never think at all. They're not allowed to look at the different constitutions, think about them, and say America is better, because that might just be his prejudices. So the way to eliminate prejudice and bigotry from the world is to just say everything is equally good, everything is equally right, every behavior, every nation. That's why they love the United Nations, because they don't care if one nation commits genocide. Who's to say genocide's wrong? After all, they didn't think it was wrong. Are you smarter than they are? Are you better than they are? You're a bigot. All right, so the first law of the unified field theory of liberalism is they were raised to believe that indiscriminateness is a moral imperative because its opposite is discrimination. And the second law, as I discussed a moment ago, the second law is that indiscriminateness of thought does not lead to indiscriminateness of policy. It leads to siding invariably with the evil over the good, the wrong over the right, etc. Why? Because if nothing, if no person, if no nation, if no culture, if no religion, if nothing is better than anything else, then success is unjust. This, by the way, is why they are absolutely convinced that it's the Jews who are the oppressors and the Palestinians who are not only oppressed but the victims of genocide. Now, most of these people who say that know that there's no genocide going on. In fact, they know that the Gaza Strip is one of the most crowded areas in the world because they just keep multiplying. There's, 60 years this genocide supposedly been going on, and there are more Palestinians than ever before. There are more universities. They know these things, but they ignore the fact. The reason they come to that horrible conclusion is because if the Jewish culture isn't better than the Muslim culture, then how do you explain the success of the land of Israel with its gleaming skyscrapers and its bustling cities and its Nobel Prize-winning scientists? If they're nothing special, how is Israel so exceptional? Conversely, if the Palestinians aren't bad or wrong, then how do you explain their poverty? The only explanation they're allowed to have is that since both cultures are equally good, the Jews must have stolen their success, while the failure of the Palestinians must have been put upon them.
Well, is that not a mindset? That's just a basic type of mindset, though, isn't that? I see that, you know, like when I was growing up, is that, okay, well, you got that thing, well, you know, where did you steal that from, or where did you get that from, you know, because you didn't work I'm only 53, so, but I mean, it's been going on for a while.
Wait, what age does somebody stop saying only? I'm only 53. At what age does somebody... Yeah, okay.
I'm doing that on purpose.
I'm only 72.
No, but you know, it seems like that's just a mindset that I guess is common, maybe. I don't know.
Not. It wasn't common prior to the 1960s. It wasn't common to America. In fact, it was quite the opposite. In America, typically you said, "Oh, you got that, man? How'd you earn it? And can you teach me?" You know, mindset of entitlement, this mindset of all the things that came along in the modern liberal era that are a function of modern liberalism, that is in fact a function of the mental retardation, the intellectual, not mental retardation, intellectual retardation of the children. You know, the reason I call my book The Kindergarten of Eden, how the modern liberal thinks, is because the modern liberal is literally morally and intellectually retarded at the level of the five-year-old child. You see, you enter kindergarten, and what are the things you learn? You learn everybody must get a cookie, no child may have two. Everybody must get a trophy, no matter how, there are no exceptional players. Don't hit anyone, because war is not the answer. You know, let me give you just an example of how this works. I remember when I was 5 years old, going around the neighborhood on Halloween trick-or-treating. And all the kids had a bag for candy in one hand and a little box with a slit on top for nickels and dimes and pennies that we would then give to the United Nations. Because when you were 5 years old, everybody thought the United Nations was great. Talk everything out, everybody gets a turn, everybody, you know, nobody hits. But then
UNICEF,
exactly. Then what happens is, everybody learns more things about the United Nations. You learn about how the peacekeepers turned their backs for the Rwandans to be massacred. You learn about how Yasser Arafat was invited to spread his genocidal vitriol to the General Assembly. You learn about how the Sudanese were made head of the Human Rights Commission while they're committing genocide. And those of us who I call right thinkers factor those facts into our opinion of the United Nations, and we change our opinion. We don't like the United Nations. We recognize it as what it is, a force for evil. But the liberals still adore the United Nations. Why? It's not because they don't know the same facts we do. It's because the facts that I just mentioned are things they learned after kindergarten. They didn't know what massacre meant in kindergarten. What they know is that the peacekeepers didn't hit. Therefore, the UN is good.
Do you also think that the liberals, you know, if they give it all to the UN, then they won't get blamed for things that happen in the world?
I don't think that they have enough moral and intellectual courage to say right is right and wrong is wrong. That's why they think that we're arrogant if we stand up for principles. How dare we? What makes us think we're so special? No, I remember one of the things that made me start to think about this. I was driving down the street in San Francisco, and on the car next to me was a bumper sticker that said, "Stop supporting Israel." And I said to her, of all the political things you could say, of all the causes you could back, why would you make undermining the region's lone democracy be your one public statement? And she said, well, you may think they're a democracy, but the Palestinians don't. And I said to her, but are they a democracy? She said, yes, but it doesn't matter because the Palestinians don't. She said, they're not allowed. You know, there's a great line, a great quote from the poet Robert Frost. He defined a liberal as a chap so broad-minded He won't even take his own side in a quarrel.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Pretty much. And you're listening to Women Patriots, and we're talking to Evan Sayet. And the number here is 718-305-7176. And we're talking to Evan Sayet, and the author of The Kindergarten of Eden. Where can we get the book?
Oh, boy. Go first to evansayet.com. EvanSam.com. Buy it through there if you can, because Amazon takes such a big chunk. But if you're not comfortable going through there, go to Amazon. I still get some money. And those are the two places available for Kindle. Available for Nook, but I think you probably have to go to BarnesandNoble.com. Or you can come, you know, you can hire me to speak at your event, and I'll bring some books.
Now, Barb, I wanted to ask you something. Being a Jew, I wanted to ask you, and being that you were a liberal, why is it that the majority of Jews seem to side with the Democratic Party? What is that mindset?
It's an easy answer, but it's not a quick answer. So let me speak in my New York, you know, fast talk and see if I can get through this one.
Yeah, can we get a little bit of both, maybe?
Okay.
And that's why I love the New York talk.
Yeah. The first thing you have to understand is that to be called a Jew or to call yourself a Jew is different than any other religion. Right? To call yourself a Christian or to be a Christian, you have to believe something. You have to believe that Jesus Christ is your Lord and Savior. If you believe that, you're a Christian. If you don't believe that, you're not a Christian. If you do believe that, there are certain rites and rituals, practices and behaviors and beliefs that follow. Right? To call yourself a Muslim, you have to believe something. You have to believe that the Quran is the final testament of God and Muhammad, his perfect messenger. If you believe that, you're a Muslim. If you don't believe that, you're not a Muslim. If you do believe that, then there are certain rites and rituals, practices and behaviors and beliefs that tend to follow. But to be called or to call yourself a Jew, you don't have to believe anything. All you have to do is plop out of a Jewish womb, and you are a Jew. So to expect somebody to vote one way or the other or to hold Jewish values and beliefs simply because of an accident of their birth, they happened to have a Jewish mother through no belief or practice of their own, it's almost the notion of bigotry, that people are born believing certain things or born behaving certain things. And there's just no reason to expect the secular Jew to in any way care about the Jews of the world, the Jews of Israel, or to support the values that are Jewish, which are overwhelmingly in the Republican Party, as proved by the simple fact. There are you can divide Judaism into four basic groups. In ascending order of belief and practice, you have your secular Jews who have no belief and no practice. Then you have your Reformed Jews who basically have done one thing Jewish in their whole life. They joined a synagogue. Then you go to the conservative Jews who are very Jewish but bring their Judaism into this world. And then finally the Orthodox Jews who are very, very religious and they keep their religion and make their own community. In ascending order of Jewishness, the secular Jewish community votes almost not at all for the Republican Party. The Reformed Jew, somewhat, the conservative Jews, very much, and the Orthodox Jews, almost 100%. So the more Jewish you are, the less you embrace the leftist movement, because liberalism is the antithesis of Judaism. And let me be clear, modern liberalism. Because the modern liberal seeks to punish the good, right, and successful. They seek to punish the good because anything the society recognizes as good, since nothing is better than anything else, must be the beneficiary of society's bigotries. So in the name of social justice, the modern liberal must try to denigrate that which society sees as good. And conversely, they must champion that which society sees as evil, since nothing is evil. Anything that society calls evil must be the victim of society's bigotries.
That's pretty good short and long explanation, actually. I mean, that sums it up. I mean, I'm not Jewish, so I always was wondering about that. You know, I just could not get into the mindset I try to get into the mindset of people out there of different races and different creeds and so on, and I just never could understand that.
Well, I promise you, and I promise your audience, if you get the Kindergarten of Eden, how the modern liberal thinks, you will understand finally, not the politicians. We understand the politicians. They're in it for the money. They're in it for the power. All right? Not the even the ideologues. But I'm talking about my favorite cousin, who isn't a partisan, isn't stupid, and yet will intentionally reject the facts, like the ones I named about the United Nations or the ones about the Middle East, intentionally ignore the facts, offer ludicrous reasoning, invariably to champion abortion, invariably to champion the terrorists, as we said on 9/11, invariably to champion the United Nations, invariably to champion all that is evil, failed, and wrong, and attack the good, right, and successful. I'll give you another example, just from the my story is a little bit long, that's why I'm hesitating. But from the Grammy Awards, where they chose the song F U as the best song of the year. By the way, it's not F, it's the entire word, because vulgarizing society is part of the modern liberal agenda. Now, if you know the song, it's a cute little Partridge Family-like ditty with vulgar and vile racial references and children parading throughout the whole video saying and singing these words. By what aesthetic criterion was this song the best song? The answer is zero. But they're not allowed to have musical standards because that might just be their bigotries. So having eliminated their musical standards, the standard they chose was the opposite of what society thinks is good. Society knows that vulgarity coarsens our interactions, so they chose the song, the title, that was vulgar.
Wow. Yeah. I just got to ask you, with your Jewish family in New York and them being liberal and you reverting.
Wait. You're making an assumption there, but they started liberal, yep.
Oh, okay, because I was wondering if you fight with your family.
I did before they changed.
Oh, see, you're so lucky. I grew up.
Not lucky, I worked hard.
Yeah.
They didn't change on their own. They changed from listening to me talking the way I'm talking now.
Good. I'm glad somebody heard you. Because I grew up on Long Island, and my family on Long Island.
Can I ask you where on Long Island?
Belmore.
Okay, because you're breaking up on me a little bit, but I grew up in Manhasset.
Oh, yeah, in the nice Jewish area.
Of course. And by the way, you don't need to say that's redundant. You can say one or the other. You don't need to say both.
All right.
Nice Jewish is assumed.
Well, I know I have a lot of Jewish friends, and they are nice. Anyway, I came from the other side of the track, but down there where I'm from, they were all Republicans, and my family in New Jersey are all diehard libs. And to this day...
Yeah, can I ask you what your family in New Jersey, what they do for a living?
Actually, they own their own business.
That is strikingly odd.
Well, they have been very liberal for years. And when confronted with stuff, they're like, oh, yeah, well, everybody does that. My aunt and uncle retired, and my cousin has taken over the business, and my cousin has the union in there. So.
Yep. So that has opened his eyes.
Yep.
Yeah, and exactly. In some ways, I mean, I the modern liberal era, as I describe it, is post-World War II through today. And really, that means the people who were born in 1960 or so really were the first generation, fully anyway, raised by and in the modern liberal era. And I'm just wondering how old your I think you said aunt and uncle were.
Were they born? Yeah.
Okay, yeah, because they probably still had left over a different belief about what the Democratic Party was. You know, because if you think about John F. Kennedy, for example, who so many older Democrats revere, and you think about his iconic statement, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And you look at today's liberal, and that's diametrically opposed to what they believe. Ask not what your country can do for you. What is the Democratic Party about? The government doing for you. And
right,
what was this
exactly.
whole Sandra Fluck thing? Here's a woman who was in her fourth decade on the planet, had not only not done anything for her country, had never done anything for anybody because she'd never left the schoolyard. She hadn't left the schoolyard, and yet the President of the United States takes time out to call her. She speaks at the Democratic National Convention. What's her claim to fame? She did nothing for anybody, but she's famous for demanding more free things for herself. And that makes her a Democratic Party hero today.
Oh, I know. That's sickening. But I have to take a break, so could you bear with us a minute?
Of course. Just don't put another guest on, that's all. That was my only problem. Otherwise, I got no problems with you.
You're a great guest. I'm not good either. Like the true anchors they are, Michael Smith and Bing Fisher bring Soldiers of Patriotism Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central. Dependable is hardly enough to describe our two main men and their awesome show. Hey, it wouldn't be conservativenationradio.org without Michael B. and Uncle Bing, would it? So don't miss our signature show, Soldiers of Patriotism, Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central, on conservativenationradio.org. Real conservatism for real conservatives.
It takes 12 years to create a graduate. It takes about the same time to create a dropout. The difference between a child becoming one or the other could be you. Studies prove that reading to a child regularly dramatically improves reading skills. And kids who read well by third grade are four times as likely to graduate. So United Way is calling for 1 million volunteers over the next 3 years. We're asking you to step up, make a pledge, tutor a child who needs help, mentor a kid who needs someone on their side, volunteer to read to children, make a difference. Because when a child advances, we all advance. Entire communities improve. The path to success or failure starts long before graduation day. And the difference between a graduate and a dropout could be you. Be a reader, tutor, or mentor. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge. Go to liveunited.org now. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Vince Gill for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Real life's not a song. In less than it takes to play my latest hit, someone will be killed or injured in an alcohol-related crash. So next time you're out with someone who's been drinking, don't let them take the wheel. Take the keys instead. Sad stories make great songs, but happy endings make better lives. That's why friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Okay, and you're back with Women Patriots, and our guest tonight is Evan Sayet, and you could give us a call at 718-305-7176, and you can call in and ask questions. And we did have a question in the chat room. Now I have to go back and find it, if you don't mind taking any questions.
No, I love that.
It's up here somewhere. Oh, ask why the Ashkenazi are so different from the, I don't know. Uncle Ben, can you read that?
I think it's in Pig Latin or something up there.
Well, you can't say that any longer because that's offensive to Muslims.
Yeah.
I've never been politically correct a day in my life, and I'm not going to start now.
No, in fact, I think it's time to go exactly the opposite direction. You know, what's very interesting is what liberals do, and this isn't the next book because this is volume one. There's actually a volume two coming out before the end of the year, and I talk about the language of the modern liberal. And what the modern liberal does, because they really want exactly the opposite of everything that we want. So they take the words that mean things to us. For example, they take the word justice. But they don't want justice. So what do? They insert a modifier before it, social justice. And by that, they mean something completely different, in fact, exactly the opposite of what you and me, you and I mean by justice. That you and I want to be correct. They don't want to be correct. They want to be wrong. They want to side with the evil, fair, and wrong. So they insert the word politically correct, which means not correct. They're not speaking the truth. Otherwise, you don't need the modifier. And my favorite example, it's a story, but not as big, not as long as the Jew story. All right? A few years ago, one of the leading music industry guys, a guy named Danny Goldberg, he was responsible very much for bringing gangster rap into the mainstream and got filthy rich by doing it. He and Michael Mann, the director of who brought violence into mainstream, you know, PG-13-ish movies, they were meeting with this truly evil human being, this Nazi, this fascist, this real Hitler named Tipper Gore. Because Tipper thought that we should do more to protect our children from the vile, disgusting things that Goldberg was putting out there for children and man as well. And they got to talking about violence. And Michael Mann said, you know, Ms. Gore, it seems to me there are three kinds of violence. There's cartoon violence, which is what we grew up with, where you don't see the actual consequences of the violence. Then there's the realistic portrayal of violence. That's what we try to do. And then there's the worst kind of violence of all. Are you guys ready for this?
Okay.
The psychic violence of the Bill Cosby show. Now, could there have been a less violent television show in all of human history than the Bill Cosby show with Cliff Huxtable? So what does he mean by violence? He doesn't. He means the opposite of violence. See, it was psychically violent by being nonviolent because blacks are violent. So when blacks see a nonviolent black family, it causes them psychic distress. It's insane. But you'll notice that he, by the way, he not only believed it, but when he wrote his autobiography, he repeated the story as if it was genius. The psychic violence of the Bill Cosby show.
Yeah. Wow, I didn't know that show was that heavy. I mean,
because blacks in America are supposedly all horribly impoverished, when they see a successful black family, it makes them feel bad about their own family. So that causes violence to their psyche. That's the argument.
Well, I wonder how people on that side would feel about Michelle Obama sitting there saying that she finally is proud to be an American after her husband got elected.
Oh, I'm sure they agree. I'm sure they absolutely agree.
That's just right.
Again, it's okay. It's your show. You don't apologize to me. because again, if America is nothing special, then they should be embarrassed by America because of our riches, because of our success, because of our strength. So I have no doubt that Barack Obama and Michelle Obama and all the other liberals have never been proud of this nation. Because by definition, and by the way, you look at the textbooks that they now use to teach our children, and they will lie. And by the way, Howard Zinn, the author of the most assigned text on American history, has said point blank that he lies in his books. He has said objectivity is undesirable. He said if you think that history should serve a social purpose, then you make your choices based on that. So he lies for liberalism, leftism, and admits it. And what do they teach our children? That America is an imperialistic nation. In fact, there has never been a less imperialist major power in human history. Think about this, guys. When Germany was the world superpower, they tried to take over the world. When France was the world superpower, they tried to take over the world. when England was the world superpower, they tried to take over the world. When we were the world superpower, and Europe was decimated, and Asia was decimated, and Africa, as always, was a non-starter, and the Muslims, as always, were primitive, and we held in our hand this weapon, this the most destructive weapon in all of human history, we didn't even take over Canada.
Yeah.
Right, so for them
really.
To teach that we're imperialist is an out-and-out lie. So why do they do it? Because they need some explanation for America's prosperity that isn't our culture. Because if it is our culture, there goes all of liberalism. So
yeah,
they have
it's
to explain.
It's antithetical. It's antithetical to how they believe. I mean, I was going to ask you. Bottom line, what do they want? What do they want?
Okay, ultimately, what they want is this: they believe that it is beliefs, not evil beliefs, beliefs that cause all war, and war causes poverty, and poverty causes crime, and crime causes injustice. If they can get people to stop believing in anything, then there'll be nothing to fight for. So they believe that by saying everything is the same, then there'll be no disagreements. We won't argue about anything. Look at the John Lennon song, which is the national anthem of modern liberalism. It doesn't say imagine all democracies. It doesn't say imagine all forgiving religions. It says imagine no countries. So in that view, you've eliminated Nazi Germany, but you've also eliminated America, which has given the world peace, security, every medicine you can imagine, every food, expansion of food supplies. Okay, so they believe that if you make everything meet in the middle by tearing down the good just a little, elevating the evil in esteem and stature until everything meets in the middle, there won't be any war. And, you know, you saw this paradigm in perhaps the single most successful modern liberal motion picture ever made, right? in Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11. What did he do? He lied to make Saddam Hussein look just a little less evil. He lied to make America look just a little more evil until the two would meet in the middle. Why? Because then we wouldn't support the war. There'll be peace as long as nobody believes in anything.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny. John Lennon also wrote Revolution. So.
Yes, and John Lennon, by the way, John Lennon also called himself naive for having written Imagine. And he was also, at least according to, who was his personal assistant, had become basically a Republican by the time he was shot.
Yeah, is that amazing? I mean, I heard at one time, I don't know about Paul McCartney anymore, but I mean, I heard that one time that most of the Beatles did. But we're talking, you're listening to Women and Patriots, and I know I'm not a woman, but
yeah,
they're
kind of crazy too.
I got on the show,
and there was another guest on the show. Then I hear a man's voice on Women Patriots, and I don't know what's going on, but I'm okay now.
I hope so now.
Brenda is actually on vacation this week, so I last minute got Uncle Bing to come and help me because I didn't know if we were going to get a lot of callers. If anybody does want to call in, 718.
I can't believe nobody's calling in. Either I'm so clear that they don't have any questions, or they hate me so much they don't want to talk to me.
No, because
I don't think. Yeah, our listeners don't have to. Yeah, you're answering the questions.
You're answering a lot of questions.
We're talking to Evan Sayet, author of The Kindergarten of Eden. You get out on Amazon.com. We got some links. I think Barbara's putting them up there, or Teresa in the chat room.
And just in general, guys, I prefer if you include the subtitle. So it's The Kindergarten of Eden, How the Modern Liberal Thinks.
How the Modern Liberal Thinks. That's a heavy part of the book.
The Kindergarten of Eden could be fiction, nonfiction. It could be a kid's book. It could be anything. But once you get to that subtitle, there's no doubt what this book is.
Now,
and why are you convinced that ignorance is bliss?
Yeah, and the reason that you're convinced that ignorance is bliss is because if you don't recognize anything, listen, you know, the children There was a book years ago called Everything I Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. And in it, the author swears that this is true. He learned be nice, wash your hands, take a nap, eat a cookie. And if you extrapolate these into grown-up, adult, sophisticated language, he believes, and he honestly believes, that you will have the answer to every problem in the world. And this book sold millions and millions and millions of copies because there are millions and millions and millions of people who believe that, who believe that anything you learn is bigotry because somebody had to write the book, somebody had to put their spin on it. So anything you learn is bigotry. Therefore, anything that has been learned has to be unlearned through lies.
Wow. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny you say that because the mainstream media won't tell the truth, or they will lie and cut out things and make things into their narrative. And then when the truth comes out, then it's like, because, for example, the IRS, you know, people are saying, no, we're not getting what we need from the IRS, blah, 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 being targeted. And, you know, they're like, oh, that's not true, blah, 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 you know, you're lying. And come to find out, wow, this is a big scandal. The IRS
is doing that. Right. In fact, I just went to Washington, D.C., well, just now is March. But if you guys can say I'm only 53, I can say March was just. And I returned to the Heritage Foundation where I gave that original speech, which is now their most watched talk in their entire history, and I showed how my unified field theory of liberalism, those laws that are in this book, how it applied to the mainstream media, and how and why they've gotten literally every single major story of our lifetime, not just wrong, but as wrong as wrong can be, diametrically opposed to the truth and as is true throughout the paradigm, always to the benefit of the evil found and wrong or the detriment of the good, right, and successful. And I'll just give you a couple of examples very quickly. Well, first of all, look at Benghazi. Look at Benghazi, where instead of reporting the truth that this is a planned terrorist murder of our ambassador, it was an unplanned murder, killing, provoked by a YouTube video that nobody saw that came out 6 months ago. Okay, again, intentionally making themselves stupid. They know that that wasn't the cause. Intentionally making themselves stupid, because if the Muslims weren't provoked, then the Muslims are bad. So they had to invent a provocation so that Islam is no better and no worse than any other religion.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry about that. That's a motorcycle going by.
Oh, and it's not me on it. Anyway, one of our guests, he wanted to call in, but he's taking care of a child at the moment, but he's listening in, and he just typed in.
Now, are you being funny and he's looking after a liberal or really a child?
No, he's his child.
Okay.
He was wondering about how the left views government, the left seems to be driven for, stop typing, Kyle.
I didn't understand that last thing, so would you repeat it?
Well,
how the left.
Okay, I just told Kyle to stop typing because I'm trying to read and the words keep moving.
Okay.
So, he said, I was wondering how the left views government, the left seems to be driven for the unity, which they take as breaking down all walls, barriers, etc., and how they might apply to, say, its theory.
Right. No, he's got it exactly right. The bigger the government, the more everything is the same. All right? If you make decisions, first of all, if you make decisions as an individual, your decisions are going to be bigoted. So they want to take as much power away from the individual as they possibly can. Then when you get to the state level, the local level, well, look at all the different municipalities. How many of them are bigots, racists, homophobes, even xenophobes? So take the power away from them. And then how many states? Well, certainly all the southern states are evil. So take the power away from them. And ultimately, if they could get us to the United Nations and a one-world governance, that would be their hope. And why it is they think that a government is going to be any, you know, comprised of utopian and perfect people. It's just because they're idiots. It's because they really believe as children that mommy and daddy will take care. But the less the individual has power, the more power is centralized in the biggest overall umbrella. So they would go for one world government, but in the short time they're going for federal government. You know, and here's just one of the big differences. This is not psychological. It's just philosophically the big difference. Republicans and conservatives believe that if you have a problem, the first place you turn to try to ameliorate the problem is to yourself. You try to fix it. You try to do things differently. You try. If for some reason you can't, if you're handicapped, if you just can't, the second place you look for help is to your family. If they can't or won't help you, then you look to your community. Then you look to, and finally, then you look to local government. And if they, then you go to state, then you go to the federal government. Liberals believe the first place you go if you've got a problem, like Sandra Fluck wanted free money for condoms. So the first place she goes is to the federal government to force the entire nation to be under this one size fits all policy.
Is that a literal thing? I don't know.
Yeah, it was a condom slash one size fits all. Yep, that's what I did there.
No, yeah.
And by the way, I didn't mean all. I meant a guy named Saul. One size fits all. Yeah.
No, you're exactly right. Is that, you know, the liberals tend to go directly to the government when, you know, conservatives, traditional Americans, other people tend to go to themselves, you know. And I'd like to know, like, how much power do you think the church has got anymore in trying to change the mindset of the American people?
Well, it's certainly getting less and less, and you know, we're following, if you ask me about Europe, Western Europe, very, very little, and the Democratic Party is Western Europe. So it's truly hard to tell, and this president and the Democrats are fighting to destroy them, by the way, to promote religion as inherently bigoted. Because it does, by definition, say some things are good and some things are bad. Some things are right and some things are wrong. And you're not allowed to do that. That is, by definition, bigotry to the Democrat. So there's this war against Christians. There's this war against practicing Jews. The only ones there aren't a war against are Muslims. And it's because the Muslims are seen as terrorists and dangerous, and therefore they must be protected. Christianity and Judaism is seen as good, therefore they must be attacked. Islam is seen as bad, so therefore it must be championed.
Well, I don't know if it gets that deep. I just think that they feel that they have to protect.
Well, you just captured my whole book right. There.
No, I didn't mean to do that. No, I mean it. With the Muslim thing, we've got a guest coming on next week, and Usama Daktuk, and he's very good at this. But I'm from Tennessee, so you know we tend to take things a little bit slower up here. We're not as quick as.
How do you do it, New Yorkers?
He said up there. Actually, Tennessee's down
but,
there.
But the truth is, you don't have to be as smart as we do because you don't have to say as many things as we do.
No, all we have to do is
we have to talk. Let me take the question, if I may, yeah, give an example. Sure. When you shot down my entire theory a moment ago, Bill O'Reilly went on The View, and while he was there, he committed a cardinal sin in liberalism. He spoke the truth. He said, on 9/11, the Muslims attacked us. And Whoopi Goldberg and Joy Behar marched off the stage because he spoke the truth. And when they finally got them back on stage, they tried to tear down O'Reilly's point. They said, did every Muslim attack us? Which is a moronic argument. You know, it's like saying cigarettes don't cause cancer because does every cigarette kill you? Or drunk driving doesn't cause accidents. Does every drunk driver have an accident? All right, so they intentionally made a stupid argument that was easily knocked down. And then they did what they did, okay? They tried to defend the Muslims by this moronic argument that it wasn't Muslims who attacked us because not everyone did. Where that failed, they then attacked the Christians. But what about Timothy McVeigh? Well, Timothy McVeigh was not a practicing Christian. He didn't commit his atrocity in the name of Christianity. And when he did commit his atrocity, the Christians didn't cheer him and name a street after him. So the idea that one Christian who's not a Christian from the previous century proves that Christianity creates terrorists, but all the terrorist acts across the globe for the last 20 years or so doesn't prove that Islam does. So, yes, they do. They consciously had to defend what was recognized as wrong, the Muslims on 9/11, and consciously attack the Christians to show that neither is better than the other.
It's a total mind game with these people, and they get lost in it. They actually get so confused in it at times that they don't understand, you know, where they're coming from. That they forget
It's hard to make arguments when you're arguing against what you really believe. You know, they know that America isn't an imperialist nation, so now they have to make things up. They know that Israel isn't responsible for the attacks in the Middle East, so now they have to make things up. Listen to what the journalists do, okay? Right now, the journalist's conventional wisdom, the storyline, the narrative, is that the reason there's not peace in the Middle East is because Jews build houses in East Jerusalem. Now, in order to believe something that stupid, they would have to pretend that they don't know that the Muslims aren't living in peace with any infidels anywhere in the world, with the only exceptions being when they are such a small minority, they can't wreak havoc. So they have to pretend that all of these other Muslim murders have something else that causes them, but in Israel, it's the Jews because somebody built an extension on their house.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But that's every journalist.
Oh, yeah.
That's the conventional wisdom. That's the narrative as taught in our schools. Right now, there is not a single other nation on this planet that the liberals are trying to boycott and divest from. Why Israel, this tiny liberal democracy? It's not because they're the worst nation in the history of the world. It's because they're one of the two greatest nations. Because the modern liberal will invariably side with evil over good, wrong over right, and behaviors that lead to failure over those that lead to success. Inevitably.
Yeah. I got another question for you in here. Yeah. When is the next time you're going to be on the Laugh Factory? I think
today, for the first time in a while, I contacted the Laugh Factory to get a date. So I'm waiting to hear back, and I'm going to hopefully do it both in the Hollywood Laugh Factory and in Long Beach for all you people in the Orange County soon. I don't have a date, but it's so funny because I haven't even thought about doing a show in L.A. since my book came out. Because I've been on tour and speaking, you know, in a serious fashion. Because I don't know if your audience can gather this, but I'm actually a stand-up comedian, too.
Well, yeah.
No, we never did. I could have never fathomed that.
I actually have to take another break. It's 9:33. So let me go ahead and do these real quick, and we'll get right back to you, Evan, okay?
Okay.
Our friendly local Republican spokesman, Duke Brooks, call himself a hello con, and rightly so, since it's clear that anti-communism is in his DNA. His parents were friends with Joe McCarthy and Whitaker Chambers, so what would you expect? Get your weekly dosage of old-school conservatism, right-wing politics, American history, and Hangar Flying on Radio Free America with Duke Brooks on Wednesday nights at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central on conservativenationradio.org. Real conservatism for real conservatives.
Okay, so just type the job website address here. That's it. Then you enter what job you're looking for there.
Electrician.
This is Peter. Recently, he got help going on the internet for the first time to look for a new job.
Okay. Then you just hit search and...
In the past, Peter's gotten work through people he knew, but he heard there were more jobs online.
There we go.
These are all for me?
Uh-huh.
Really?
He had no idea just how many.
I can't believe it. This one looks good.
Peter is thinking the internet might be for him after all.
And this is just one website.
Wow. Why didn't I do this sooner?
See what the internet can help you do at everyoneon.org or call 1-855-387-9166 to find a free training class near you. Brought to you by Connect, Compete, and the Ad Council.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Okay, and you're back with Women Patriots, and we have Evan Say It with us, 718-305-7176, if you want to call in and join the show. We have another question from Kyle, who's taking care of his non-liberal child, thank God. He wants to know, is siding with evil over good, failed over success, right over wrong, stop typing, right over wrong, simply a matter of power disparity?
Here's the answer. If nothing is better than anything else, which is what they have to believe, there's actually two kinds of modern liberals. Sorry to introduce this so late in the game, but I didn't want to confuse things. But there are the ideologues who believe, as I described earlier, that if nobody believes anything's better than anything else, there won't be any disagreement. Without disagreement, there won't be any fighting. Without fighting, there won't be any war. Without war, there won't be poverty. Without poverty, there won't be injustice. Without injustice, there won't be crime. So a utopia can be created. This is what the ideologues, the Howard Zinns, and perhaps the Barack Obamas, because it's impossible to tell the difference between the ideologues and those who have been brainwashed in the schools and through the media and through the entertainment industry, those are the three biggies, not to think, but thinking is bigotry. So therefore, they have to think everything. Either way, the bottom line is the modern liberal was raised to believe that indiscriminateness, not using your mind to discriminate between right and wrong, good and evil, better and worse, is a hate crime. All right? Indiscriminateness, I'm sorry, is a moral imperative, because its opposite is discrimination. That's what makes it a hate crime. Because if you use your mind to discriminate, you become an evil discriminator. All right? So at that point, do they tear down the good because they want this utopia that comes from making everything the same? That's if they're a true believer. Do they tear down the good because good is a bigoted notion? That's if they're a mindless foot soldier. So there's no difference in the rhetoric and the policies. If you go back to Michael Moore's movie, did he lie against America and for Saddam Hussein because he believes that you can make you can bring peace if neither one is better than the other? Or did he lie against America because America isn't better, and therefore he cherry-picked the facts to prove that bigger truth? There's no way of knowing, because either way, it's exactly the same movie. You know, does a journalist lie about Israel because he thinks if he does, he's going to bring peace? Or does he lie against Israel because Israel's success proves that those lies must be true?
I know, a little tiny country. They're a military powerhouse. They're actually an economic powerhouse. And, you know, people are afraid of them.
There's no reason to be afraid of Israel, just like there's no reason to be afraid of America. You know, the expression is, if the Arabs put down their guns, there'd be peace today. If the Jews put down the guns, there'd be no more Jews tomorrow.
No Jews, yeah.
All right? There's nothing to be afraid of from the Jews. But what it
with
is...
respect, maybe.
Okay, there you go. But the problem is, again, how is the modern liberal to explain this tiny, tiny nation, only 60-something years old now, and all the Nobel Prize-winning scientists they create, while the Muslim world creates nothing, nothing of value, nothing that makes... How do you explain it if the Jewish culture isn't better? And since they have to start with the conclusion that the Jewish culture isn't better, they have to invent some evidence as the Jews as the oppressor and the Arabs as the oppressed.
Well, Evan, do you think in this country that we are terrorized, that we've already been terrorized? In other words, you can't sit there and speak your mind anymore been terrorized.
Yeah, there's doubt about it. But here's the thing. Even this is when Alec Baldwin spews homophobic attacks, spews it, the media covers it up. All right? Why? Because then he's a liberal, and therefore nothing is sacred to the liberal except their ideology. But yes, he's absolutely been terrorized, and I know we have. Look at my industry, showbiz.
Yeah, but then you got Paula Deen that sat there and said the N-word when she was being
because
held
she's
at gunpoint in the bank.
Right, 20 years ago, because she's a Southerner. And they have to prove that Southerners are bigots, because that way you can prove that America is comprised of bigots. This is the reason they're picking on her. Look at the Trayvon Martin case. All right, this is a case where they first thought that they caught themselves a Jew, because Jews very 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 rarely commit crimes, you know, of that nature. And so they thought they'd got themselves a Jew because his name was Zimmerman. All right, and that's the only reason they made a big deal out of it. Then they found out he was Hispanic, so they invented a brand new category never before spoken, white Hispanic. And then they went back and they got pictures of Trayvon from when he was 14 years old and looked cute and sweet and innocent, rather than the gangster from his Facebook page or any of the ones that show him at the age he was when he was beating Zimmerman. And all they did, why? Because the narrative was America is a racist nation. Whites are racist. That's why whites are doing better than blacks. And therefore, if they have to lie and manipulate the evidence, they will do that in favor of their bigger truth.
And what kills me the most is how the black community down there, in most areas, they're going ahead and doing the tweeting, and I don't even know if they're doing it on Facebook, but they're doing it on Twitter. You know, if Zimmerman goes free, then I'll just have to kill a white kid for no reason.
They've been doing that for ages. I lived in Florida. They've been doing that all the time.
But where's the media reporting on it? And they won't report on it because their narrative is that whites are more successful than blacks because whites are oppressing the blacks. Blacks are victims. Blacks are not the race. They're wonderful. They're wonderful, wonderful. And therefore, if they were to report these actual things, people might think maybe it's not so wonderful.
Well, it's class warfare at its finest. And, you know, I hopefully sometimes think that the people like Jesse Jackson and the L. Sharptons eventually will, you know, be gone and we won't have to deal with it. But there's just going to be somebody else that fills in their shoes, isn't there?
Well, so long as – listen, there's a cost-benefit equation. I don't think Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton are ideologues. I think they're whores. I think they glommed onto a very lucrative profession. They got everyone in the media said, oh, they're the official spokesman. How did they become – how did James Brown's road manager, Al Sharpton with the gold chains and the – how did he become the official voice of black America? And the answer is because the media, when there's a story that they needed a black voice for, they went to Al Sharpton because the media is racist. The media thinks that's what blacks would be like if whites didn't inculcate them to their culture.
You mean us creepy white crackers?
Yeah, that's, and that's okay to say, but Paula Deen 20 years ago, you know, and she's paying the price now. And I'm so sorry she's running around apologizing. It was 2 decades ago. My goodness.
I don't think I would be apologizing. I think back then I would have been saying a lot more things, or I would have been doing something different. But I don't know. I mean, God love her. I mean, you know, but you know, when we got people
She does a cooking show. Who cares?
I know. I mean, she's minuscule in the scheme of life. You know, I mean, really.
But
I mean, unless
that,
you want to make
reason they blow it up. Okay, so she's minuscule in the scheme of life, and it was from 20 years ago. So it's even more, but yet they're not reporting what is happening right now on Twitter in Florida. Why? Right. How do they sit in their newsrooms when they're budgeting the half hour or hour of their show and saying this story is in, this story is out? And the answer isn't any journalistic standards, because liberals can have no standards. Because by definition, a standard is bigoted. It says this is right and this is wrong. And that you can't discriminate. You can't use your mind to say yes or no. So what they did was they picked the story that made the white person look bad, and they covered up the story that made the black person look bad.
And they're not saying that she's an Obama supporter either, because she is.
That's right, because that would make her a liberal, which is the same reason they're not reporting what the liberal Alec Baldwin said.
Yep, doesn't fit their narrative once again.
Yep.
And this is what we're up against in our life.
Well, but I have a solution. I have a I don't know if it's a solution. I try not to think in terms of solution. I try to ameliorate rather than perfect. But I have a program I call Adopt a Democrat. See, the good news is America is not divided in two. Right? Adopt as in a child, the Kindergarten of Eden, available at evansayit.com. America is not divided in two. We're divided in three. There are those of us who get it, that right and wrong, good and evil, better and worse, truth and lies do exist. We recognize, for example, that America is exceptional. And so we seek to conserve that which is exceptional, that which is good, that which is right. That's why we're called conservatives. All the way on the other side of things are the left-wing ideologues, the ones who believe you can bring about paradise if you lie against the good and lie on behalf of evil till nothing looks better or worse, therefore nothing's worth fighting for. But then there are a whole big group in the middle who don't really believe America is evil, who don't really believe that the Jews are the cause of all the violence, that abortion on demand to a 12-year-old is good, etc. But they've never heard from a conservative what a conservative believes. Where would they have heard it? Think about this, guys. There are three media, I know I'm saying the word incorrectly, but I prefer to say it this way. There are three mediums that the liberals hate. They hate Fox News, they hate conservative talk radio, and they hate the blogosphere like the Drudge Report. Well,
yeah.
What do those three things have in common? One, they're all relatively new. Fox News is only like 15 years old. So if you're still only like 53 years old, that means you were into your fourth decade before there was a single news channel that the liberals could disagree with. All right, the talk radio.
Good point.
Rush Limbaugh's only 20 years on syndication, and maybe another 10 years until it became this phenomenon. So you're talking again. Only 10 years ago was there a voice anywhere that wasn't from the left. And, of course, what year did Al Gore get the Internet? In the 90s, and then it became the blogosphere, 2004? So where would somebody have heard from a conservative what a conservative believes? So what you have to do is find one person, just one person in your life, who you know is not a left-wing ideologue, but who has just never heard what we believe from us. And over the course of time, you don't pick every battle. You don't hit them over the head with it. You know what? Like letting your five-year-old beat you to the front door so you can tell him how fast and wonderful he is. Every once in a while, let your liberal friend beat you in the argument. And over the course of time, when he says something particularly stupid, like the attacks in Benghazi were because of that video, take that opportunity to walk them through the fact, to point out how ludicrous it is, and then move on to something else just like you would with your kid. Not everything is a teaching moment, not everything is a teachable moment, but when you have those opportunities, and over the course of time, you will change people. I have changed people. You asked me earlier about my family in New York.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So adopt a Democrat and buy my book.
Okay,
not in that order. Not in that order.
Now, you said adopt a Democrat, not necessarily a liberal, though.
Well, first of all, it's hard to tell, it's hard to tell which is which. But, yeah, you want a Democrat more, if you look left to right on the spectrum, you go liberal is the furthest left or modern liberal, uppercase L. Then the Democrat is a little further to the right. Then the Republican is a little further to the right. Then the conservative is further to the right of the Republican Party. So, yeah, I'd say go for the Democrat because the liberal, if they identify themselves as such, may well be too far gone.
Well, I like that idea. I just don't know if I don't know if I got the stomach for it, but, I might try that.
Well, you know what?
This is
war for the survival of our nation. A generation ago, war meant going over to Europe or elsewhere and risking your life. This means risking, having your stomach turn listening to a liberal. I think you owe it to your ancestors and your posterity.
I definitely do.
Most of them are just so pig-headed that they don't even want to have an open mind. But
yeah,
some
that's
of them
right, because thinking is the evil act. They can't have an open mind because that would require them to think. But you know what? They're still one of the things that they do to discredit us is to instantly attack us as racist, xenophobes, homophobes, disophobes, datophobes, and that just shuts us up. They call us Nazis and Hitlers. But it's very difficult for your favorite cousin to call you those things, to reject you out of hand. So it's one of the reasons I say it should be somebody you know and know well, because that takes that your evil attitude away from them.
Well, I don't know about that. I can be evil, especially to family members.
well, stop
no,
it.
But I understand exactly what you're saying.
I'll tell you a story at my favorite cousin's house. We were there for Passover, and when the children were out of the room looking for the Afikomen, they were out of the room playing. My cousin got up, and he repeated something that he had heard at shul, at temple that day. And he said, "We have to do more to help the Sudanese." And I'm thinking, that's nice. I don't know what exactly. We've tried every time we do. The bad guys just steal the money or they murder the people who go over there and try to help. But, okay, it's a lovely sentiment. And then he said, "You do know why we have troops in Iraq, but not in the Sudan, don't you?" Well, I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I do. This is what I do for a living. I know, but I'm not going to say anything. He says, "Because Iraq has oil and the Sudanese are black." And I couldn't help myself. I jumped up and I yelled his name. I'm going to call him Bill. "Bill, that is asinine." I said, "There are two possibilities here. Either Americans are evil, horrible racists who love to steal other people's money, or we went to Iraq because Saddam Hussein had invaded Iran and invaded Kuwait and bombed Saudi Arabia and bombed Israel. Either we didn't go to the Sudan. We didn't go to the Sudan because they hadn't crossed any borders, because they weren't using Scud missiles. They were using machetes for all kinds of things." He knew all of these facts. Even if he never put them together, even never thought it, he knew all of these facts. He intentionally ignored them in order to make America the racist, evil, horrible nation. But here's what happened.
Yeah.
That changed nothing in my cousin. But there was another couple at the table who had never heard that argument, who would have just believed what my cousin had said had I not said something. Did I change them instantly? I doubt it highly. But you know what? The next time they hear me, the next time they hear you, the next time somebody does that, we'll soften them up a little more. But there was a third couple at the table who knew everything and agreed with me completely, but weren't going to say anything because they didn't want to cause trouble. Maybe now they saw that you can stand up. So did it change the world in one argument? No. It didn't even change my cousin at all. But with one couple, it laid the seed, planted the seed, and with another couple, perhaps it gave them the courage.
Yeah, there you go.
Evan, we got a caller in from Brooklyn, New York. That I think you
I
might
love
know.
Brooklyn, New York. My mom was from Brooklyn, New York.
Name's Duke Brooks.
Evan.
Come on, Duke.
Hello. This is your Uncle Herr calling from Brooklyn. I have never heard. You're out of your mind. I've never heard anything. Evan. I've got to be honest with you, I am a New Yorker like you, and if you and I had grown up anywhere near each other, you would have referred to me as that nice Catholic boy or that goyim from around the corner, and that's fine. I just absolutely love listening to what you're saying. It is so refreshing because, as you are aware, the vast majority of Jewish people in this country vote Democrat. There are very few Orthodox Jews around. There are some in New York City, obviously, but it's the Reforms and the so-called conservative. They are my question earlier in the chat room, incidentally, was why are the Ashkenazi almost entirely liberal and the Sephardics are almost entirely politically conservative? At least that has been my own experience.
Right, and I've never thought about it. I've never had that question posed. And rather than try to just make up an answer for you now, let me look into it. And you can email me. Email me at evan@evansayit.com. And when I give it some thought, all right, because a lot of times you feel you have to be glib, you have to give an answer. I don't know the answer to that, so...
Well, that's up to, all right, fair enough, but I'm very glad to be speaking with you.
I feel like a loser now.
No,
you're not a loser. We can't know everything.
You're absolutely not. While I'm here, I did want to invite everyone to listen tomorrow night at 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Central, to Radio Free America, and tomorrow night my guest is going to be Gary O'Neill, a former U.S. Army Ranger and Airborne Special Forces fellow who spent his career in the United States Army, and he has just come out with a book that is called American Warrior. It's going to be extremely interesting, and I hope that people will listen. And, Evan, I will be emailing you, and I would like to get you on the air on my show.
Don't only be fair. You're on the air on my show.
I like that.
And buy my book.
We're going to be running out of time in like a few minutes. So, if Evan, can you stay on or do you need to run? Because we have people calling.
Sorry about that. Oh, no, I got another radio show I have to do at the top of the hour.
Okay.
Evan, we'll be talking to you again soon. And Barbara and Bing, have a great night, everyone.
Okay,
thanks.
I'll talk to you soon as well. Don't forget to plug my book one more time, and where they can get it, The Kindergarten of Eden, How the Modern Liberal Thinks. I promise you, and I promise your audience, you guys know who Bill Whittle is?
Yes.
Have you heard of Bill Whittle? Yep.
Yeah.
Bill Whittle says
love this book.
Bill Whittle, you love him. You got to love him. I don't love him because he's smarter than I am. But Bill Whittle said of my book, it is perhaps the most important book I've read in the last 10 years. He said it has forever changed and clarified the way I view the world. I promise your audience, every single one of them should buy this book right now. It is the definitive explanation to what you didn't, what you don't understand. How it is your smart, kind, good cousin will side with abortion on demand. This Dr. Gosnell, and they won't cover him. et cetera, et cetera. It is the definitive explanation.
Can we get autographed copies of that book?
When am I in New York again? I'm not sure. Of course.
We'll get that out. I just wanted to ask if that was available. So
it's available because I'm making it available. It's not available if I don't make it available. So be nice to me for the next 5 minutes, and it's available.
5 seconds left, Kevin.
Okay, guys. Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you so much.
We really appreciate all your insight, your book. I actually have it online here, but I'll email you. I want a signed copy.
Okay, and thank Dr. Sigmund for me.
I will do that, and thank you so much for your time. And I'll probably go over to Kira's show and listen.
Oh, terrific. Terrific. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Evan.
Bye.
Wow, funny guess, Barbara. I mean, he's into all sorts of stuff. Great.
Oh, my God, he was awesome.
And he answered everything that I asked him, and, you know, not with no hesitation. So it was just a great, great show. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for coming in once again and bailing me out. You're the best.
Oh, you don't need bailing out, girl. I'm just doing my thing.
I didn't want, I had the phones. I didn't want to, if people were calling in, because I do know people did want to call in, but they couldn't because they were busy doing other stuff, but they were listening. So, I mean, it's all good. It's all good. It all worked out. All right. I guess we're not on the air anymore, so I'm going to go ahead and end the episode. Thank you again, and we will talk soon.
Thanks.
I hope we'll get some autographed books from him.
Yeah, thank you for tuning in to Women Patriots and conservativenationradio.org. We appreciate everybody that was in chat and everybody that called in and everybody that had something to say. So, thanks. Great show.
Yes, it was. Thank you. I don't know where my outro is. I don't know. Are we still even on the air?
Yeah, we're in record mode, I think. Keep going.
Okay, because it's at zero.
I don't trust them. They're a bunch of commies, man.
I don't know. This is what I wanted to go out with anyway.
Good night, all.
Good night, everybody.
Across the plains of Texas, from sea to sky.